bureaus worldwide. This is FSN.
Thank you, Benji. Welcome to Thursday's Richie Allen Show. It's freezing out there. It's colder than a witch's teat. It's colder than a witch's teat, so it is. I'm Richie Allen. Michael Rivero returns to the Richie Allen Show. It's been ages. Can't wait to speak with Mike today. And later on in the programme, I'll be opening the telephone line and the Skype thing for you to call me and tell me what it is that's on your mind. Can't wait for that. Welcome to your Richie Allen Show.
Well, wing out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, welcome to the program, Michael Rivero. Can't wait to catch up with Michael. You know the Twitter handle by now. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Do get in touch during the program. And as I said, later on, I'll be taking your calls on Skype. And the Skype handle for the program is Chat with Richie. That's all one word, Chat with Richie. All right? And the UK telephone number is 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from outside the country, it is +44 161 818 2018. But the Skype name is Chat with Richie, because it doesn't cost you anything to Skype the program, apart from the electricity, of course. I will give those details out again just before speaking with Michael, and I look forward to hearing you later on. Priority given, please, to people who haven't spoken to us before or even in some time. We do very well. We get lots of calls from new people all the time, and I love that. So I do. If you heard Benji there in the news, Benji, he was talking about immigration, because it has been the talk of the campaign trail today, about 4.5, is it 5 weeks before the election. Is it 5 weeks from today? I don't know. I can't do the mathematics. The Conservative Party has been telling us that in the manifesto, which will be published really soon, there will be a pledge to introduce a new points-based immigration system. To tell you more about that, here is the Prime Minister himself, Boris Johnson.
I'm in favour of people of talent being able to come to this country. I've been basically pro-immigration for talented people ever since I was Mayor of London. But I'm also in favour of control. And I don't think it's right that we should have a system of immigration where there is, at the moment, no democratic control over huge numbers of people who can come in and without any checks or whatever, without any job to go to. So what we're going to do is we're going to have an Australian-style, points-based system that will allow us to control who comes in and make sure that we do not have so many people coming in without skills, without jobs to come to, that we therefore protect wages, we increase wages, and we also make sure, it's a crucial point, that companies in this country, and business in this country, invest in the skills of young people growing up in this country. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, Boris Johnson there, the Prime Minister. Well, the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, has spoken to the BBC this afternoon and will not say whether he wants the number of immigrants coming to the UK to rise or fall. Jeremy Corbyn is singularly the most ridiculous political figure in the history of the UK. A wretched, ridiculous human being. He really is. Have a listen to him here speaking to the BBC. It's fun.
I want to see immigration being fair, and we'll see what the outcome of that is. But the principle has to be that there are many families in Britain that want to bring relatives here, and families should have a chance to live together but can't because of the income levels they're required to do. And also, we have to be realistic that in this country we have 40,000 nurse vacancies, we have a great shortage of doctors, we have shortages of many skills. They cannot be met very quickly because we're not training enough people. So there's going to be immigration in the future.
But it's a point of principle, though. If you were Prime Minister, would you be content with the current level, which has been, it's been relatively stable, roughly speaking, we've been adding the population of Newcastle or Oldham to the population every year. As a point of principle, would you be happy if it went up, or would you rather see it go down?
Very good question. Every year we've been adding net, right? We've been adding a city the size of Newcastle to the population. Are you happy with that, Capweasel?
As a point of principle, I want people to be able to be reunited with their families, and I want British people to be able to work across Europe as they are at the present time. And I think putting arbitrary figures on it, as successive governments have done, simply doesn't work. Our immigration strategy is based on fairness, on justice, and on the economic needs of our society, and they are considerable.
Yeah. There is murder in the Labour Party. Murders. Murders. Because Diane Abbott seemingly didn't get the memo from Jeremy, and she's the Shadow Home Secretary. She said today that Labour will extend freedom of movement rights if Labour forms the next government. We will extend freedom of movement, said Diane. And incredibly, Unite leader Len McCluskey, who's a close friend of Jeremy Corbyn's, he said the party's official policy of keeping open borders was not a sensible approach. Now, this, as I have been telling you till I have become blue in the face, is the proper point of view of the trade unionists. The trade unionist, if he is sincere, if he or she is sincere, don't be misogynistic, Richie, will say that keeping an open border policy is not sensible and it is only to the detriment of people who work in semi-skilled jobs. That's what you would expect. But Corbyn won't say one way or the other, and Diane Abbott has been saying, well, we'll extend freedom of movement. Here's Laura Pidcock. She is from the North East, YI man. She's a Labour MP. Some people think she might be a potential future party leader. She was on Radio 4 this morning and she branded immigration targets arbitrary. And she, well, have a listen to her. You'll find this very interesting indeed. Labour MP Laura Pidcock speaking on BBC Radio 4 this morning about immigration.
We are certainly not going to do is put the lives of people on the line here in a general election campaign. We know, and I just talked about sectoral collective bargaining, we know that actually migrant labour does not undercut wages, okay? It is exploitative bosses that seek to undermine national agreements. That's our emphasis.
So you'd be happy then for immigration to rise if Labour's elected?
She
won't answer.
I think these targets are arbitrary. The Conservative government broke every single target that they put in place. When I knock on people's doors in the community that I represent and I ask them, every single door that I am on, what are the main issues that you are concerned about? And that is education, it's housing,
well,
it's the right that
Len
they have
McCluskey,
at work.
The leader of the Unite Union, would disagree with you on that. He's talked to The Guardian today. He thinks it's very important, particularly in certain northern and midland constituencies. And he says, it's wrong in my view to have any greater free movement of labour unless you get stricter labour market regulation.
Yes, Len McCluskey is right. It devastates working communities when you allow unfettered numbers of people coming in from around Europe to compete for an already very pronounced shortage of manual labour jobs, or, as I said before, semi-skilled jobs. That is the genuine trade unionist socialist position. But these people don't care about people. Pidcock again refuses to answer the question.
Yeah, and you just heard me talk about a system that we will implement of sectoral collective bargaining. We will have a workers' protection agency that will be the friend of the good employer, the individual worker and the trade union, where we'll be looking to enforce those employment standards. You know, it isn't right that we place the blame on numbers of immigrants for wages. Actually, those employers that seek to undermine those national agreements are to blame for the exploitation.
Indeed, those employers who exploit migrants are to blame, not the migrants. We know that, you cloth-eared daft Geordie Bint. We know that. The employers would not be in a position to screw their communities if there wasn't an open door, turn a blind eye policy to migration. You see?
Some of the people you're hoping to attract in this election do think that. Len McCluskey says white working class supporters of Leave in the 2016 referendum will be driven into the arms of a hard right party unless their concerns about migration were dealt with.
Of course, and that is why Tommy the Tit Robinson and the other thugs on the far right love this. They love that the fake socialists have abandoned the working classes because they're there to pick up the pieces and listen to people's genuine concerns. This nutcase Pidcock then says that fears about immigration are a false flag.
I think it's a false flag, this issue of immigration.
Interesting. So you'll be arguing then for the party conference policy, which is to maintain and extend free movement rights in the manifesto.
Is mischaracterising Len McCluskey as some kind
of... No, she's not. McCluskey couldn't have been any more clear as the nose on the end of your face. It is not a sensible approach to talk about extending free movement of people because it has a devastating real-time impact on poor working people's lives and their ability to get and stay in a job. The BBC Radio 4 presenter, for a change, is not mischaracterising the trade unionist position.
Some kind of false division in the Labour Party. He is the leader.
There's a massive division in the Labour Party. On the one hand, you have clueless, feckless, titless, cowardly Corbyn saying, I'm not going to say one way or the other whether we'll increase or decrease immigration. Then you have Diane Abbott, the Shadow Home Secretary, saying, we definitely will extend it, free movement of people. And you have Len McCluskey, the trade unionist, saying it's a stupid thing to do. Massive division in your party. Again, you cloth-eared bint.
Of the trade union that I am a member of, he talks very clearly.
Fucking liars, every one of them. Disgusting, sick liars. Six-figure salaries, that's just the beginning. That's not including the cushy little jobs they get serving on various committees. They couldn't be any further removed from the people they are elected to serve. They don't care about those people. Not interested. Not interested in them. They label those people as little Englanders and as bigots and as racists because they have the temerity to say, Jesus, look at how the numbers of people living in our town has grown. We can't sustain that. It's more difficult for me to get a job. It's more difficult for me to get a hospital appointment. I don't dislike these people. There's just too bloody many of them, love. What's happening? You're a racist! Of course. Let's move on swiftly. Laura Pidcock. Well, the floods, Jesus, the floods in South Yorkshire, the River Don bursting its banks. God love people, Fish Lake. It's a terrible thing. I really mean that. I don't know what it's like. It must be dreadful to see your property, your belongings destroyed, not knowing whether you're coming or going, arguing with insurance companies. It's terrible. Well, anyway, what we should understand, according to Lord Daben, is it's climate change. This is a crusty old fecker, a crusty old fecker who sits in the House of Lords, Lord Daben, and he is the chair of the Independent Committee on Climate Change. And he was on with the Ginger Ninja, Sky Breakfast with Kate this morning. He's a real beauty. Burley says to him, terrible, isn't it, Lord Daben? Terrible, these floods.
Well, it is terrible, isn't it? I mean, flooding is the most awful thing, invasive thing, and it stays. And some of these people have had it before, and therefore it's a really serious reminder of what it was like before. And it's not only here. You can look at the terrible pictures from Venice, for example.
Yeah.
To see the worst floods they've had for 100 years. So, I mean, this is exacerbated by climate change. It means the rain comes down more steadily, it holds more water vapour in the air.
What?
What kind of fuckery are you?
I was telling my learned friend Jean Anne on the telephone this morning about this. What did he just say there?
This is exacerbated by climate change. It means the rain comes down more steadily, it holds more water vapour in the air.
We've got to hear that again. The floods are because of climate change, because...
This is exacerbated by climate change, it means the rain comes down more steadily, it holds more water vapour in the air.
The rain comes down more steadily, it holds more water vapour in the air. And before you know it, you've got South Yorkshire under 6 feet of water. There you go. I'm going to play it again, folks. I'm labouring the point, but you've got to hear this.
This is exacerbated by climate change. It means the rain comes down more steadily, it holds more water vapour in the air.
It holds more water vapour in the air. The rain comes down more steadily, you know. Come on, Kay. Yeah, Kay sits there and nods along. Yeah. And then when he talks about we've only got 10 years to do something, Kay says, yeah, I know, we do, 10 years. We've only got 10 years. We've only got 10 years. It's been a funny day today. It's been a funny day. The Liberal Democrats have been rolling out their equality and human rights policies. Equality and human rights policies, Lib Dems. And one of the things they want is they want the X gender option to be included on passports and driver's licenses as part of equality's drive. So basically, the Lib Dems are saying, if you're a complete fucking idiot and you believe yourself to be non-binary, because if you think of yourself as non-binary, you are an insufferable fucking arsehole, aren't you? I know you are. And I know there will be one or two non-binaries listening. I'm speaking to you directly. You are dreadful. You don't deserve to breathe the same air as the rest of us. A proper idiot, right? But anyway, the Lib Dems are your friend, because they want the X gender option to be included on the passport so that you can declare yourself to be, well, non-binary. And finally for the moment, by the way, finally for a moment, let me just briefly say hello to Michael Rivera there. Michael has just sent me a message. I had to respond to him just to confirm that we're due to talk in a couple of minutes' time. I think Mike is still getting used to the time difference between Hawaii and where he is on Central Time these days. He's, I did say it this morning, didn't I? I said something stupid. I should have said he's left Hawaii and he's gone to the mainland. But I didn't say that. I gave the impression that the United States and Hawaii were two. Well, they weren't one and the same. I know Hawaii is a state, I know that. Hey, listen, before we move on, investigators looking into the shooting down of Malaysia Airlines flight MH17 have today laughably said that they've got phone calls recorded between Ukrainian separatists and Russian officials. They say the calls prove the degree to which the leadership of the breakaway Donetsk People's Republic was talking to leaders in Moscow. They blame the Donetsk People's Republic for blowing up the plane. They've told us this going back 2 years. And they said the missile was supplied by Russia to the Donetsk People's Republic. They provided no proof of that whatsoever. And today they said there's been a phone call and we have it and it proves some sort of collusion. But I've listened to the phone call and read the transcript. There's no evidence in the call. There's no mention of planes. There's no mention of blowing up planes or using missiles. It's laughable. It's just more claims, which I can't prove are untrue. I can't declare for a fact that they are untrue. All I can say is they've given us no bloody evidence. Give us some evidence, lads. You know, stop telling us that the Russians did this and the Russians did that, you know. Well, that's all right. Well, you've got to show us some blooming evidence. But they never show us some blooming evidence. Anyway, 22 minutes it is past the hour. Let's take a tune from Texas. Before we take the tune from Texas, let me remind you, after I speak with Michael Rivera, I will be taking your calls on Skype and through the telephone thing, my telephone machine. What's going on there, eh? Funny thing happening there. Hang on. I know what's happening there. Let me just sort that out. Should be all right now. Yeah, it's all right now. Yes. The telephone number is 0161818 2018. 0161818 2018. If you're calling from outside the country, +44 161818 2018. But You can Skype it for free. Chat with Richie, all one word, is the Skype handle. Don't ring now. It won't be switched on until around 30 seconds before we start taking those calls. All right, all right. Michael Rivero is next on Your Richie Allen Show, Thursday, November 14th. Here's Texas. Great tune. That takes me back to the 1990s, says David Stanford on Twitter. How you doing, David? 25 and a half minutes past the hour. It's Your Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. Broadcasting live from Salford, of course, multiple platforms around the world. It's time to welcome back to the programme a great friend of ours. It's been quite a while since he was on. He's a brilliant journalist and broadcaster. You know, he's the man behind whatreallyhappened.com and the What Really Happened radio show. If you haven't, and it's unlikely, but if you haven't checked out whatreallyhappened.com before, it is a veritable treasure trove of vital information that is being kept hidden from you by the mainstream media. Let's welcome back. It's a great pleasure to my old friend, Michael Rivero. Mike, it's a thrill to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We're still getting settled in our new home. And, you know, being in Indiana, we just had our first major snowfall of the winter. And, you know, after spending so many years in Hawaii, it takes a bit of getting used to.
I can imagine it does, Mike. Did you have to do a double take to realize that it was snow? Having spent so much time in tropical climates, as you just mentioned.
Well, you know, Claire just thinks it's beautiful and it's a lot of fun, but then she doesn't have to drive in it or shovel it, so.
She doesn't help with the shoveling.
I have a different perspective.
It's great to have you back, my friend. Welcome back to the program. Meant everything I said about the website. WhatReallyHappened.com, folks, check it out. Michael, obviously I'm going to start with the beginning of the impeachment inquiry into your president, Donald Trump. It was claimed yesterday that Trump did ask about a Ukrainian investigation into Joe Biden, and that is a fact, and that, you know, that should pave the way for this to proceed. I understand that even if there's congressional support for it, it wouldn't pass the Senate anyway. I'm guessing you've got a different take on what this is really all about. What's happening here, Michael?
Well, first of all, the claim that Trump demanded that quid pro quo is very much in doubt. It's based on hearsay evidence, rumor, and innuendo. And Ukraine's president is denying it happened. Trump is denying it happened. There's the transcript of the phone call in question from July 25th makes no mention of it whatsoever. So at this point, the Democrats, I mean, they've been just trying to pull this stuff out of thin air ever since Trump won the 2016 election. I mean, first, it was Russian collusion. That fell apart. People were caught lying about that. There was that Christopher Steele dossier that turned out to be completely fake. And now we're in this impeachment circus, if you will, where they're out there. And it's not really a hearing so much as a smear campaign. And they don't really have anything. In fact, one of the Republicans asked one of the witnesses, what actual crime has Trump committed? And he didn't have an answer for that. And so now Nancy Pelosi is out there trying to change the focus and say, well, you know, we have a duty to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So now the new spin, if you will, is that Trump somehow represents a threat to the Constitution, which is kind of weird because it is the Democrats and the impeachment process that are acting unconstitutionally. For one thing, the GOP are not allowed to call any witnesses into the hearing. And this is a violation of the Bill of Rights. Everyone's allowed to face their accuser and to cross-examine, except the President of the United States.
Funny you mentioned there being no mention in the transcripts of the request for the quid pro quo. You're right to say that. Did I hear this morning that a Democratic senator or congressman who's taking part in this initial inquiry, did he actually say out loud, Michael, that hearsay evidence can be more useful than incontrovertible hard evidence? Did he actually say that?
He actually came on out and said that.
My God.
Basically telegraphing that they don't have any direct evidence of wrongdoing. And so, yeah, they've thrown the floor open to rumor, innuendo, and hearsay. And they're trying to say, oh, yeah, I mean, there's so much smoke there, there has to be fire. And what they're trying to do is convince the American people that it's okay to get rid of a president just because the Democrats don't like him.
Very interesting. This Hillary Clinton, his opponent in 2016, is in the United Kingdom at the moment. It's a very annoying thing happening. You know the BBC, Michael, you know it well. It's broken up into many different national radio stations. We've got five or six national stations. We've got the television stations. It is a behemoth of an organisation. And over the last few days, she's going from programme to programme. It was Radio 5 during the week. It was BBC Television 1. Today she was on Radio 2 with Jeremy Vine. And she's hawking a book about impressive women or gutsy women or something like that. But she's getting a free rein to criticise Trump and to keep talking about Russian collusion. None of the BBC presenters are attempting to play devil's advocate and put Trump's point of view or at least say, look, there is no evidence of collusion. But it's an interesting time because the UK government is sitting on a report into alleged Russian interference in UK elections, Michael. I know you're aware of this. And they won't won't release that report. And Clinton is saying, well, this is proof then, if they don't release it, that that there must be evidence of Russian collusion here. She's, I suppose you could argue that she's interfering in the general election process here, Michael.
Yes, it could be argued that way. And, you know, she's going all over the world right now. She's keeping herself in the public eye here. And she's going through this sort of charade, if you will, about saying, well, I don't know if I'm going to run in 2020. And yet she's acting like somebody who's getting ready to step into the race.
Isn't she? So your gut feeling is she might be, because she did say to a BBC presenter called Emma Barnett, On Tuesday, I think, she said that she was getting pulled in lots of different directions and that she was being almost begged to announce. But she said categorically to Barnett that I will not do that. And the BBC presenter said, well, will I be embarrassed in a week's time when I pick up a newspaper and see that you've changed your mind? And emphatically, Clinton said, no, Michael, I'm not going to run.
Well, I certainly hope she doesn't. It all comes down to whether she thinks she has a chance of winning or stealing the presidency next year. And she tried really hard to do that in 2016, came up short. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people in permanent Washington are so angry with Donald Trump. He broke their system and proved that they're really not in total control of the political process.
Yeah, fair enough. On that, Michael, I've been obviously very critical of every single politician that ever lived. I don't have any time for any of them. I know you're the same over the years. Today, the UK media is running with the MH17 story. They won't allow this one to go. Claims that investigators have some audio, some phone taps of the Donbass separatist group and the Russian military colluding about, you know, bringing down this plane in 2014. But they don't have any evidence. Well, at least as I can see, the phone call doesn't prove anything. While I've been very critical of Trump for his allegiances to Israel and for his refusal to really pull back from overseas intervention, to be fair to Trump, he has tried to normalise relations with Russia, or at least it appears to me that he has, you know, tried to have more friendly relations with Russia. What do you think?
He campaigned on that platform, to improve relations with Russia. But the war hawks, the military-industrial complex in this country, they want more war. They don't care who with, because war means more money from the pockets of the American taxpayer and, into their pockets to build weapons. And what they're building these days tends to be overpriced junk. It came out the other day that, in point of fact, the F-35 stealth fighter can be detected on certain radars. Apparently, there was an incident where an F-35 got sprayed with firefighting foam, and it promptly melted the very expensive coating on the outside of the plane. These things are delicate. They're fragile. And there have been so many problems. The F-22 has been caught on radar. The Zumwalt has got drivetrain problems, and it's also not very stealthy. The Gerald R. Ford, experts are saying it may never actually be usable in real combat. But by golly, it looks great in a parade.
Looks great in a parade. Michael Rivera was our guest, whatreallyhappened.com, live on the line today from Indiana. Michael, it's too early to talk about it, but just briefly, there's reports coming out of California that this morning there's been a shooting at a high school and that there might be many injuries there. Let's hope that nobody died there. I find that obviously depressing, but also interesting, because I would have been led to believe that at high schools around the country, Michael, security is at an all-time high, I would have believed. You know, in recent years, scanners, more security on campuses and stuff. This is I know you're looking at it there while I'm chatting with you as well. This is live radio, folks. This is only a developing brand new story. According to the LA Times, the suspect is a 15-year-old boy, an Asian boy. Asian might mean Oriental. It might mean from the Middle East. But it's Santa Clarita, north of Los Angeles. I know you know that area, Michael. I know you know.
Yes, I do.
You know it well. So I would have thought, Michael, that because of shootings in recent years, that they've really locked down security, that they've almost become like prisons, these high schools. What do you think?
Yeah, they absolutely have. But, you know, there's reason to believe that a lot of these shootings are being staged to support the gun grabber agenda, which is to get rid of the Second Amendment and disarm us all. And of course, what they want to disarm are the law-abiding citizens. And so when you have that kind of power and authority, they just blow right past whatever security happens to be there.
Yeah, and if you really wanted to do that and you had the military expertise to do it, it would be easy to get a weapon to somebody whose mind you've managed to take over or control anyway, right?
Yes.
I would have imagined so. whatreallyhappened.com, get your teeth in, Richie. Michael's website. Great to have Michael back on the programme. Michael, you and I talked about the UK leaving the European Union. We were right, Michael. It's never going to happen, right? You've been following this. We're never going to leave. What have you made of it?
Yeah, it's very obvious that the rulers of Great Britain are ignoring the will of the British people. And I think when they announce that Brexit is dead, we could very well see riots in the streets.
Do you think that, Michael? Because we know, we see the Gilets Jaunes, they don't often get a mention. On this programme, I should say, we don't often mention, maybe we should mention more often, who've taken to the streets in France and managed to keep a prolonged protest going on. We've seen it in Hungary, we've seen it in other places. You actually do foresee a real reaction from ordinary men and women when this becomes obviously dead, because at the moment the public probably thinks that they can go and vote in the election in December and they can choose the Conservative Party or they can vote for the Brexit Party. They probably still think there's a chance of voting for Brexit by proxy in the election. But when it does become apparent that we're not going to leave, you really do see people taken to the streets.
Well, this goes beyond Brexit itself. The social contract, if you will, between the people and government is that the people maintain some sort of control over the government by virtue of voting. And in the referendum, Brexit won. And so the British people have been watching this dog and pony show with the Remainers. And, you know, they're saying, if this is canceled, then obviously our voting doesn't really mean
doesn't
anything.
Matter.
So why are we obeying this government? Why are we paying taxes?
Michael, it's never mattered, has it? In our lifetime, you're not that much older than I am. A vote for any of these people, whether it's Trump, whether it's any of the other Republicans who might run in 6 years' time, or in, I should say 4 years' time, 5 years' time, the whole system has to come down, Michael. We can't choose a leader or leaders from the pool that they give us that are going to make a real difference to end wars, you know, to restore sovereignty to the people. The whole system has got to change eventually. We've talked about this for years, you and me.
Yes.
And the obvious next question is, what would we replace it with?
Well, I don't know about Great Britain, but here in the United States of America, I think we should simply restart the country with the original Constitution and the first 13 amendments. Obviously, there's going to be an argument over the Electoral College. It is obsolete and no longer needed. But, you know, the original country, there were severe limits on government power. And that was to keep the power and authority in the hands of the separate states and in the hands of the people. And we've lost all of that. Our central government has just grabbed all the power and authority to itself, to the point where it's just utter chaos out there trying to get anything done.
I've been asked to put a couple of questions to you, my friend. I know you don't mind. We've seen, obviously, in Latin America, South America recently, upheaval. Bolivia, of course, the president fleeing to Mexico there. He was nationalizing industries in the country. He was sticking up for the indigenous people in the country. I've been asked to put it to you, has that got CIA written all over, do you think?
Oh, there's no question about it. For one thing, we know that the opposition was being funded by American non-governmental organizations like USAID. And yeah, I mean, it follows that whole Hugo Chavez model, where Hugo Chavez was nationalizing the country's assets and resources, and he was spending the money on the people. And American corporations don't like that. They want those resources for themselves, and they want political leaders who will convince their people that this is a good thing and to just go along with it.
Yeah, we're talking about Evo Morales, of course, is in Mexico now. And Maduro is undergoing the same. He's undergoing the same attacks, external attacks, of course, in Venezuela. And our listeners, some of them understand, some of them don't understand it because they read the press and the press tells them that these guys are lunatic socialists that have bankrupted their own countries. But the truth is, Michael, it's sanctions being brought in by the enemies of the country, United States and others, that cripples the country and, I suppose, you know, causes that angst or that kind of disquiet amongst the civilian population, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And the thing is, we know that this is following the standard script for the color revolution, which is that these opposition groups that are well-funded go on in. They build a coalition of people who are unhappy with the current system. And if you go into any country, you're going to find a segment of the population is unhappy with the current government. And you fund them and you motivate them and you get them out in the street with signs and just kick up as much chaos as you can.
Another question. We've got Michael for another 5 minutes or thereabouts. Thanks for coming on. I know you sound a bit scratchy. You've got the old lurgy, as we call it here in the UK. We've all got it this time of year.
Yes.
But hopefully the snow, Michael, will kill the germs there in Indiana. Just a couple of more questions, my friend, and we'll let you get some hot water and honey into you. Israel and Gaza, ceasefire announced in the last 12 or 14 hours. Some of our listeners worried that we're seeing the beginnings of maybe another incursion into Gaza by the Israeli Defense Forces that left 2,500 people dead, including 500 children, in 2014. Are the signs there again, do you think, that the Israelis are about to put the planes in the sky and attack Gaza again on a large scale?
Yes, I do think it's going to happen. And Netanyahu kicked this all off with that assassination of this Islamic leader. And unfortunately, Gaza took the bait and fired back. And that allowed Israel to come on in. And they've flown something like 50 airstrikes, artillery fire, and they're just pounding the heck out of Gaza. And this is Netanyahu trying to prove to the people of Israel that he is definitely more capable of protecting Israel than his opponent, Benny Gantz.
Yeah.
Because they still don't have a clear leader there in Israel. And so this is a campaign stunt by Netanyahu.
You're right, the country's in limbo. But he should be in prison, Michael. I mean,
yes.
Apparently the evidence is overwhelming that this guy is as bent as a $7 note, right?
Yes.
And he's not. He's gotten his wife to take the rap for him, as far as I understand.
Well, you know, in Israel, unfortunately, killing Palestinians is good politics.
Yeah, it's a national sport there. Michael, just before we let you go, give our many of our listeners are well aware of who you are on the radio show, but for listeners who are maybe hearing you for the first time, listening to us through Fab Radio here in Manchester, tell us about the What Really Happened radio show and where people can hear it.
Okay, the What Really Happened radio show is broadcast by the Republic Broadcasting Network in Austin, Texas, actually Round Rock, Texas, and it airs from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central United States time. And there's a show archive both at RBN and also at Ron Gibson's YouTube page.
It's a brilliant show, Mike. You know I mean that when I say that. It's been around a long time, and it was very, very useful to me when I began to leave commercial radio and to start, you know, taking a different look at the media. Get better, my friend. Regards to Claire, and the best of luck in your new life in Indiana. I hope we'll get you back on for a few minutes before Christmas. Thanks so much for your time.
Not a problem here. I mean, like I said, we're just finishing settling on in. I'm still putting my studio back together, but I am able to come on to your show on a regular basis now.
You're a gent, Mike. Look after yourself, my friend. Enjoy the snow shoveling. Catch you soon. Bye for now. Bye, Michael. Thanks a lot. The brilliant Michael Rivero there, live on the line to us from Indiana. Lovely to have him back on the programme. And good luck to him and Claire there in Indiana. Great stuff. Right. It's coming up for 13 minutes to the top of the hour. Give me about 5 or 6 minutes. I'll open Skype and I'll open the telephone thing. When I say I'll open it, I'll switch it on. That's what I mean. And you can talk to me. If you've never spoken to me before, give me a ring. And you can set the agenda. What would you like to talk about? Talk about any of these issues. You can talk about immigration. You can talk about anything. I'll be glad to hear from you. I'll give you those details again before I read the tweets. The telephone number. Forget the telephone. Skype chat with Richie. There is no T in Richie. That's all one word. Chat with Richie. You can call then if you want. If you're in the UK. Manchester 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018. This is basically, it's basically on my Twitter page, and Rog put it on the Facebook page for the Richie Allen Show, the meme, right? If you're calling from Europe or the United States, +44 161 818 2018. It's easy to talk to me. I'm an easy guy to talk to, and I love hearing from you, so I do. I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll take Bruce Springsteen. Song called Western Stars, right? I'll open the Skype in the chat now in a couple of minutes while this is playing. When I come back, I'll read some tweets before taking the calls. This is Bruce. I wake up in the morning. That's from the album Western Stars. That's the title song, Western Stars. Bruce Springsteen, what an album it is. And I'm like a child because the live version of it is going to be available in a few weeks' time. I'm looking forward to that. I've got a caller standing by. Just before I say hello to the caller, let me give you those details again. Do take your time when you're ringing. Don't panic if you don't get an answer. I will probably be speaking to somebody and I will get to you. It's Chat with Richie on Skype and the number is 0161 818 2018. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Rich. It's John from North Wales, Riffin.
How you doing, John from North Wales? Nice to hear from you. How are you today?
Oh, not too bad, thanks, mate.
Well, lovely to hear from you, John. As is the case when we do these, you get to set the agenda. What would you like to talk about?
Right, Rich. Over the last couple of weeks, Denbighshire County Council are introducing food bin chips in our food bins, microchips to measure our food waste.
No way.
Yeah, it's the first actual trial in the UK.
You're kidding me. Hang on a second. This is the wheelie bin that you put out on Thursdays or Wednesdays, and they're putting a microchip in it.
Yeah, it's not the wheelie bins. It's your actual, you know, you do your food waste.
The little green one. Well, we've got a little green one in Salford.
Yeah. That the measure. They want to know how you're using your food waste, what you're doing with it.
No way, John. This is very interesting. And did they send any leaflets around explaining what they're trying to do or why?
No. How we found out, it was in the local paper, the Denbighshire Free Press. But they have sent letters out to the residents who it's affecting. They're picking certain areas, and my town's been picked for it, but I haven't had the letter yet.
John, I'm gobsmacked here. I'm absolutely gobsmacked. I'm gobsmacked. So, because just for our listeners overseas, I'm sure it's very similar, John, in other countries. So we've got we've got four big bins for different things. We've got a bin for cardboard and paper. We've got one for bottles and cans. We've got a general waste that's unrecyclable. And we've got a bin for garden waste. But we've got a little small green one for food waste. And John, and my mate Rog has just sent me a link to the story, would you believe? I can just see the bare headlines there. You're spot on, John. They're putting microchips on the food bins.
It's fucking unbelievable, mate. It's just, it's terrible. It is fucking terrible. I don't know what's going to be next. Like, are they going to put microchips on our fucking letterboxes to see what mail we're getting?
Now, I can only imagine that the reason they're doing that is this is about carbon footprint, is it? What are people eating?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, I really do think so. It's all part of the Internet of Things, I think, as well. I really do, like, because it's all going to be, they're all going to push the 5G thing. And your bins being monitored constantly. What they've said is that the bins will be registered to your property so they know exactly how you're using your food waste.
That's Big Brother on steroids, that. I can't find a good reason for them to do it. You know, I'm thinking, can I make a devil's advocate position to John here? Can I argue with you, John? That's what I'm thinking, because I love a good argument. I can't think of a... This is shocking stuff, this.
It really is, and like I've spoke to people, like quite a few people in the community. I've took around some 5G leaflets, and they've gone down quite well. And people were like, "How I'd done it?" I said, "Look, we're getting these food chips, you know, these bins, chips in our bins, and this is all part of the 5G." And people start, and I was really, really surprised how people got onto it. I've had a really good response.
You saw people would be dismissive of it, like
I really did. I really, really did. Yeah. But no, because it's like starting to affect them in a really... The town's tiny. It's a little market town in the Vale of Clwyd. It's a tiny little town. But they want to do it in this town and in another little town, Corwin, about 20 miles away. And Prestatyn and I think... Prestatyn's another one. Yeah, I can't remember the rest of them.
I'm chatting away to you here, and I'm trying to do a little search to see has it gone on anywhere else, you know, whether inside the country or outside the country. I'm so glad that you've brought this one up, because I think you're right to link it to the smart devices that they ultimately will introduce in every home, and we won't have a choice, John, because I think in a few years' time you won't be able to get domestic appliances that are not chipped. In a way.
This is it. Yeah. But this is where we have to start fixing things. And luckily, like, I'm not into like technology, so I fix everything that we've got, basically.
I wonder, John, if you, and I wouldn't advise you do it now, because got to be careful. Councils are bastards. It's funny.
Yeah, they are.
It's funny that you if you listen to the show, you'll know that we moved to Salford 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And there's a little. I can't get my car onto my drive because there's a curb there, a big curb. And, well, I can, but I'm constantly driving over the curb. It's not great for the tyres or the wheels. And I'm not allowed to lower that. I'm not allowed to hire somebody with a jackhammer to level that off. If I do that, I could be fined thousands and thousands of pounds. But yet they insist, if you want it done, you've got to come to us and you've got to give us £1,000. But I can get a guy to do it cheaper. They're bastards, these councils.
They are twats. Like, moving on from the bin situation, during the summer, we actually had, like, there's an old school that's been shut for about 12 months now behind us and a playing field. And we actually had North Wales and Cheshire Police running round with weapons in fully... you know, like you see on the when there's a terrorist attack or one of them fake attacks, they're all blacked up and you can't see the faces.
Yeah.
Running round, shouting. I thought I really shit myself because I opened the curtain window, the window, and there they are running round with all masked up, shouting, "Get the fuck down now, you fuckers, get down now."
Who are they shouting at?
Actors. They had actors there, and when I went around to complain,
they were doing a drill.
They were on a proper drill, yeah. They did this for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I did complain to the council, and that they didn't do anything. I spoke to about three or four different councillors, and nothing happened. It was just, they were just left to carry on. And all they had was little signs saying, shooting in progress. That was it.
I like you, John, because you take an interest and you don't take it lying down. You ask questions and you get them. You know, they're probably more accustomed to people just going along with it and taking it on the chin, but you're saying, no, hang on a second. Let me just remind our listeners, John is calling in from North Wales, from a lovely village there, and he's found out through the local papers that one of the bins provided by the council for your waste, it's a small bin that you put food waste in. I think, John, you use the little white biodegradable bags, don't you?
Yeah, that's correct, Rich, yeah.
Yeah, we use them here as well. John has found out that they're microchipping those bins so that they can see just what sort of food waste people are, you know, disposing of. That's what they're saying, but of course it's far more sinister than that. You, knowing what you know, were you surprised yeah. that, were you surprised to learn that, or were you just like, well, I expected that?
Not really, Rich. No, I'm not surprised at all. These councils have got more power than the governments now. People need to realise this. They're going to Agenda 2020 and Agenda 2030. You mentioned the other week, Fairbourne's not too far away from me.
Oh, remind us about Fairbourne now. This is the coastal town in Wales. It's a beautiful little town. Is this the one that was decommissioned?
That's correct, yeah. Gwynedd County Council, I think it was about 3 weeks ago, yet again, I think that's in the local paper, in the Daily Post, they voted to decommission this village. They haven't got a choice. This village has been decommissioned.
Remind our listeners why, John. This is absolutely maddening, this. Remind us why it's been decommissioned. Because it might?
It might get flooded by seawater. They've got a magical crystal ball at Gwynedd County. A lot of these councils have got these crystal balls, and they're predicting the future and how people should live and where they should live. It's really serious, Rich. It's a fucking joke, mate.
It's horrendous that. I talked to Piers Corbyn about that on the radio show, and he couldn't believe it either. Well, he knew about it, but he just couldn't believe it. What John is talking about there, dear listener, is a coastal town in North Wales, Fairbourne's beautiful place. People have their lives there. They've lived there all their lives. They've been told by the local authority the town will be decommissioned because they are certain that sea levels will rise to the point where the village will be flooded. In other words, they've told people, your properties are worthless, you'll never be able to sell them, you've got no equity, and in a few years' time, we're going to start decommissioning the town, which, John, if I remember correctly, means taking everything out of the town that the town needs to keep it functional.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what they're going to do. So, yeah, the sewerage, electricity, post office, all that will be eventually taken away from that village.
Because the sea level might rise in 20
times. Because the sea level might rise, yeah. They can't be arsed fixing a wall, basically.
You have a sense of humour. I'm hearing in your voice you're a bit like me. You kind of navigate this stuff by just laughing sometimes. I mean, you wouldn't laugh if you're in Fairbourne, and if you are in Fairbourne, none of us are laughing at your plight, but sometimes you just have to chuckle and say the cheek of the bastards to invent stuff like that.
Well, this is it, and I think how this Fairbourne thing's happening, it's not just going to be Fairbourne, it's all little Welsh villages. This second home buying where people like have moved out the village but they buy holiday homes, and there's no actually, you know, there's only a few actually villages there now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, John, yeah.
So, you know, people, they're only going to be there, like, for about 3 months of the year, so they don't give a fuck, you know what I mean? As long as it's in a nice place, happy days.
They couldn't care less, yeah.
That's it, like, so, yeah, these councils are killing communities. They really, really fucking are, like.
Let me, first of all, thanks, mate, for coming on and telling us that. That's a bombshell about the microchip.
No worries,
it's a bombshell.
Thanks for listening, dude.
Not at all, mate. And stay in touch with me. Can you keep me posted on it? And by the way, anybody who's living near or around John, don't take the law into your own hand. Don't go at the microchip in the bin. They'll do you. They'll do you really bad.
Basically, like, if you start tampering with the bins, it is county council property, and they'll have you for it.
They will, yeah. They could destroy you.
I'm not on social media or anything like that, Rich, but I do listen to your programme every day. But if people in Denbighshire, if anyone in Denbighshire is listening to this, just please get outside the Denbighshire County Council and just say no. No, we're not having this. Like, you know, I don't care about standing outside. They're saying no. They're just ordinary people like us. That's the last thing I want to say, Rich.
Mate, thanks for calling, John. Thanks for sharing that information with us. That's, you know, I don't have producers and reporters out there on the ground. I depend on people like you to keep me updated. Not updated, but to inform me of stuff like this. That's a bombshell, mate. I won't be dropping this one. Thanks, John.
All right, cheers, Rich. Thanks very much for listening, mate.
Not
thanks
at all.
For the time.
Have a great weekend, mate. Thank you. That was John in North Wales. Jesus, huh? Did you hear that? You did. They've put wheelie, they've put, not in wheelie bins, they've put microchips in the little green food bin. You see, your food waste is collected in, you put it into small white biodegradable bags, which you then put into your little green bin. It's very small. It's about a quarter or a fifth the size of a wheelie bin, maybe even smaller than that. And you leave it out, they dump it into a big lorry and they give it back to you. And he's right, by the way, it's official. It's official. They're mother of divine Jesus. Oh, can you believe it? Let me, just before I say hi to the next caller, let me remind you of the contact details. You can chat with Richie. So that's the Skype handle, chat with Richie, all one word. The telephone number is 0161 818 2018. That's 0161 818 2018. If you're calling from outside the UK, it's +44 161 818 2018. Faisal, who's a long-time listener to the programme and who does phone in occasionally, hasn't been with me in a while. We'll get Faisal on definitely before half six. We'll get him on. Like to hear from Faisal. But if you haven't called the programme before, do. I've given you the numbers. Let's say hi to the caller on the line right now. Hey, caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Richie. It's Dean Smith from Sheffield.
Ah, Dean Smith in Sheffield.
It's a long time, Dean.
The last time you were on, we were talking about care homes, of course.
Yes, that's what... here in Finola the other day, it hit me really hard. I sent you an email actually to sort of pad out what she's been doing and what she's been researching and all that sort of stuff. And even today, I've been on it talking to social workers that I know and stuff like that.
Thanks for that. I got the email. My correspondence day is on Fridays for obvious reasons. It's the only day I'm not working. But no, I got it, mate. And obviously, I was going to get back to you because I appreciate what you said in it. Dean manages them. Remind us, Dean, who you are.
I run a care home for 8 people with learning disabilities, with complex needs, all kinds of needs. Just good people. But certain people have lived at my care home since 1987. And I've run the unit since 2006, so 13 years. So, you know, I know them pretty well. But we're one of the small guys. And this is where it comes into what Finola was saying the other night.
Can I just remind people what Finola said? Can I do a quick summary? Very quick summary.
Of course.
Then I'll shut up and get out of your way then. Finola Moss was on the programme the other night. She's got a daughter called Isabel. And Finola is a solicitor. And she's been looking into... For quite a number of years, the absolutely startling reality that people with learning disabilities and people with autism, if they have severe autism, severe learning disability, when they are 18, in many cases they are being taken, forcibly taken, into care by the state, but not by the state. The private companies, some with links to big healthcare companies in America, are paid thousands of pounds a week to basically warehouse people with long-term learning disabilities or autism. And it's a national scandal. And Panorama, the BBC television programme, some of the newspapers have dabbled in terms of trying to look into this and see what's going on, because a lot of these young men and women are treated very badly in these homes. Finola has basically said that it's a silent holocaust, that the learning disabled and the autistic are basically cash cows for major corporations. She described how the NHS isn't the organisation that we think it is. You know, we hear all the time about billions being spent on the NHS. She talked about NHS Trust, she talked about NHS England, and she talked about basically organisational groups and committees who basically take a lot of that money and give it to private interest groups or into the private sector to run services that really should be run nationally. I think I've done a semi-decent job of summing it up. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And obviously Dean, who's run a care home in Sheffield since 2006, where they look after 8 people, they've been there long term, some of them, he took a huge interest in this. What Fionnuala told us, do you think she's right? Is she right to say what she said to me the other night?
When I heard her the other night, I thought absolutely right, because I've seen one of our units closed and the people stolen straight after the MCA Act. I think it was 2005, the Mental Capacity Act, and one of our units closed because of that. I've learned a couple of things since speaking to a couple of people today because of what Fionnuala said, basically. I've delved a bit deeper, Richie, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I started to ask, I was like, oh my God, that makes sense. So what I put to you in the email today that I sent you, obviously it's really, really, I'm passionate, obviously. I have no financial gain, no matter what happens. I think I told you that before.
Yeah.
But I tried to fill out what Fionnuala was saying previous to in the 70s and 80s, the care homes were state run, so it didn't matter how many beds you had filled or whatever else. People just got their wages. It was simple. It was owned by the taxpayer. It was that simple. The NHS had nothing to do with it. In the sort of late 80s, 90s, it started getting privatised. Okay, but that was fine. You still got paid a flat rate fee for a bed. So at no more cost to taxpayer until, like Fionnuala was saying about the MCA and the Deprivation of Liberty Act and all that sort of stuff.
This is important. This is important to stay with. Dean is talking about the Mental Capacity Act. These were pieces of legislation brought in initially by the Tony Blair government. And these acts of Parliament were designed to make it easier to warehouse people in the first place. They were designed to make it easier to grab people and say, you are now a ward of the state, right?
Well, no, they were designed on the proviso that they were to protect people from that exact thing.
But that's the irony. But that's the irony, right? That's the great irony.
That is the irony. Yes, of course. Yeah. So unless somebody had the word's escaping me. Not a court protection. You've got legal protection over someone.
Power of attorney.
Power of attorney, yes. Thanks, Richard. Yes, unless you had power of attorney, you had no power. So, in the earlier days when I used to run my care home, when my family did, it was based on a family environment. It was based on people's choices. If they chose to live with you, that was their choice. The social workers would respect that, and you'd get your funding for that. No problem. There was no problem. They chose. And this is where Fionnuala comes in. She was saying that the law changed and it took away that choice. And then you got the for want of a better word, vulture capitalists. The big corporations coming in.
Of course.
My care home is hanging on by a thread. It's one of only two left in the county. And yet we are so highly regarded. People want to live there, but they're not allowed.
But they're not allowed. I can't imagine it. So what you had was, you had a situation develop whereby it became, where the state could say, right, compulsorily say, you have got to be cared for. Your parents can't cope with you. Nobody can. So you have got to be cared for. And of course, big healthcare companies loved that, didn't they? Because it was a case of, well, that's brilliant then. You're now in a situation where you can get people and you can fill homes with those people, whether they like it or not. So we'll come in and we'll run those homes for you. Fantastic. That's how it goes. And Jesus Christ.
But the law was supposed to protect those people. The MCA is supposed to protect those people. As I say, I've got like a friend that's a social worker. She goes around to people that have been abused full on, but she hasn't got the power to remove them from their families. But then they're over age, you see. What Fanola's talking about is the, obviously, I think it was Izzy. Is it Izzy?
Yeah, Izzy.
Izzy's under 18. And that's why I've reached out to Fanola and said, look, if I can help, I will, and I'll do it for free.
Well, she's 22 now, Dean. She's 22
now. She's 22. I beg your pardon, this Richie. Sorry.
No, I was...
Then I can help. I genuinely can help then.
I was caught out by this the other night when... because I was trying to do the maths in my head and I knew that Isabel was living at home with Fanola. So I'm thinking, so I asked Fanola, she said she's 22, and I said to her, I said, wow, so at any time now, they could come along and say, because Isabel is over 18, and therefore you're no longer now her sole carer, you're no longer solely responsible for her. They could now come along and say... Absolutely, they could now come along and say if she had a meltdown, and I don't like, it was a word that Fanola herself used, if she had an episode, they could say, bingo, we'll take her into care now, because she's worth $9,000 a week.
Well, can I tell you a quick story, Richard?
Yes, mate, go ahead.
When I was a kid, we had a lady, her name was Julie, and she used to wear a helmet, she used to smash her head on the wall, right? This is when I was a kid. I grew up in a care home, right, in the 70s. My dad run the place. And he instinctively knew people. Okay, so what's wrong with her? Well, her radio's broke. So do you know what? He went out and bought 27 radios. And every time she broke one, guess what?
He had one.
Just give her another radio. It was stopped her beating her head on the bloody wall. And I saw this as a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old, 9, 10. I grew up around them.
Yeah, but
I
people
know what they do.
People like your father. People like I've had the pleasure to meet people like your father. I used to go to care homes when I was younger and see people with very serious mental disabilities to the point where they were very badly, we would have said years ago they were badly handicapped, we would have said. You're not allowed to say that now.
That was the old word, yeah.
And they couldn't talk.
Mentally handicapped, yeah.
That's right. And I met people like your father who had nothing but compassion for people, who loved people and would do anything for them. And now you see documentaries, because of the system now, you see hidden camera shows where you have people throwing people on floors and, you know, standing on their necks and pushing them and punching them and stuff like that. That's what you get when you privatise stuff like this.
And it sickens me, Richie, because that's the only press that people like me get is the shit stuff. The stuff that makes you look like a dickhead. Do you know how frustrating that is?
When I can't even imagine.
I'm the one that's standing upside down making a home... I've not got office hands, Richie. I've got workers' hands.
Yeah.
But I'm an office worker.
It does make sense, mate. If I'm out drinking with you and I've never met you before, I bump into you, you say to me, I run a care home. You're thinking that I'm going to think, well, he must be an arsehole. You know, but because of the press, because the media attention on it, Sky News, BBC, but those are corporate-run facilities, and their only raison d'etre is to make a huge profit, number one, and number two, to force their costs on the general public. They don't care about people. Like, it's like Fanola said, they're cash cows. People like you, you said yourself left your there's only two left in the county. How many are left in the country?
We're dying now. We are at the point of no return at the minute. Yes,
and
it's frustrating for me because people want to live there. People want to live there, but their choice is taken away, and it's exactly what Fanola was saying. And my care home, if that person makes that choice, is a fraction of the price of what the CCG, which is the clinical commissioning group. It's a fraction of the price they will pay for someone to go somewhere else. It's a fraction of the price.
Yeah, I believe
it. Fraction.
I've looked into it. Dean is telling the truth, by the way. I know him. I've looked into it. You're absolutely right. It's a travesty, mate. Thanks for coming back on, Dean.
Right.
Man, no worries. I don't know what else to say to you.
Richard,
go ahead.
Listen, you're a fella. Can I do this before I go?
Yes.
If I don't do this, I'll hang myself. I've got a poem for you, Rich.
Go on.
You're going to cringe your ass off, right?
Go on.
But I'm going to read it anyway.
Go ahead.
Because I've started to learn that I don't give a fuck anymore.
I'm not going to cut you off, right? So the floor is yours.
Right.
Go ahead.
So I've done a poem about the climate change stuff, right? I hate the whole Greta thing.
Yeah, because it's nonsense, yeah.
Yeah, so I've called my poem Greta, Life is Shit.
Right?
Right? Just humour me. Okay. Right. Life is shitter. Life is shit, Greta. Humour me a little bit. Life could be better, Greta, innit? The climate is changing. We're all going to die. We're all going to die. Listen to lie after lie. CO2 is the poison in the sky. The lie is to make you and I comply. Do or die. Pay tax or fry. The earth has lasted for worse or better, despite the child abuse imposed on Greta. Write a letter, Greta, a £4 million yacht, you'll get a Treta. Privilege for you, but does fuck all about CO2. 0.04% of the atmosphere is CO2. If you did your research, Greta, you may have a clue. The climate is changing, it's got nothing to do with CO2. I know it's not you, your handlers, playing you like a horn. Then you speak. Spreading your fear porn, enabled, labeled, funded, no loss, money coming in by the likes of George Soros, your loss, gloss. But see, you are enabling a full-on tyranny, you get me? Peddling lies like a good little slave, people sucking up like a zombie rave. Of the month, you are the flave, thinking it's your world to save. Like, we don't care. But I question, worse in this lair, I question the killings of, like, Bush and Blair. Question Yemen. The West are so proud, selling bombs to the House of Saud. Say it loud. The world is sick, Greta. That's a fact. You have an ability to act. Hence why you have to retract, smearing truth like your windows are blacked, which in actual fact, with the knowledge you've lacked, means the words that you say need to be backtracked or sacked. It's proven the climate changes despite me and you. But it's got nothing to do with CO2.
Did you ever hear of a guy called Lemon Sissé?
I don't think I have, Rachel.
Lemon Sissé.
I'm cringing now, I'm cringing. I'm so embarrassed.
Listen,
I'm so embarrassed.
That was absolutely mint. And while you were reading that, it made me think of a guy called Lemon Sissé. He's a poet that he's got a poem displayed on a pub called Hardy's Well, which is not occupied anymore, but it's in Rusholme in Manchester, near where I used to live. It's a beautiful poem written right down the side of the wall. They made him the official poet of the 2012 Olympics. And listening to you, you write a little bit like Lemon Sissé. It's absolutely outstanding. Honest to God,
I'm going to check that out. The thing is, I read it to the wife, and she was like, oh my, because I write all kinds of poems about stuff.
That's
but I never share them. But she was like, you need to share that one.
Yeah, you do, mate. You know? Yeah. Where can we get... do me a favour. Email it to me and I'll get it put on the website. And I'll get it put on the Facebook page as well and left there because it really is brilliant. It's very, very good, mate.
It's on my YouTube channel, which, I think I've got about 11 followers. I'm like the big cheese on.
Well, you probably have more, mate, the way things are going these days. But if I can get a copy of it that I can copy and paste and put onto Facebook, please, because people will be asking. When this goes on YouTube tomorrow, there's going to be a load of comments, people asking where can they get that poem. It's great stuff,
oh,
Dean.
Bless you, mate. Well, my YouTube channel is Edge TV. It's silly and daft and, you know, Edge TV.
Not at all. Listen to me. Before I take the next call, check out Lemon Sissé. That's spelled L-E-M-N. Sissé, S-I-S-S-A-Y. He's a brilliant poet. He's a black dude with an amazing array of skills. Writes poetry. Was the official poet for the Olympics in 2012. And one of his poems is displayed in Rusholme, and it's about Hardy's Well, an old pub which is sadly gone, like all the pubs. Great guy, and you sound like him. And that's the greatest compliment I could give anybody. It's brilliant.
I'm going to check that out, and I'm sure I'll be ultra complimented. But I'm still cringing right now.
Don't be cringing, mate. No, I'm glad. I'm glad you read it out. It's really cool, mate. You couldn't have picked a better place to do it. So thanks, Dean.
I'm learning to put my head up And that's come from you and David Icke, really. People need to start speaking up.
Well, if he's listening, mate, he'd be humbled by that. Dean, thanks, buddy. Have a great weekend, and I know you'll stay in touch.
Cheers, Rich.
Cheers,
thank
Dean.
You.
Bye for now. How cool was that poem, eh? Lemon Sisse, by the way. Check him out. He, I'm not sure if he's from Manchester. I know he works at the University of Manchester these days. Where was he born? I could look it up. I will look it up. He's northwest. He mightn't be Manchester. He might be Bolton or somewhere like that. But Lemon Sisse is an outstanding poet, and Dean sounded very like him. Brilliant. Right, I'm taking more calls, by the way, and you can call me. It's, what is it? It's Chat with Richie on Skype, and it's 0161 818 2018 on the old dog and bone. Let's say hello to our next caller. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
Amazing, I got through. It's Aid up in Watford.
How you doing, Aid in Watford? Welcome to the programme. Floor is yours, Aid. What would you like to say?
Okay, so just a couple of things really come to mind, Richie. Just recently, you sort of, I think you were having, well, I don't know, one of those days, one of those weeks, it's understandable, where you were like, well, you know, the funding for the programme and it's tough and da-da-da-da-da-da. And hopefully, with people donating, it's maybe steered you into staying and doing what you do, because it's important. You know that, right? I know you say you're nobody and blah, 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 and all of that. But I imagine most of the people that listen to you, you're just the next guy. But you and your ilk do something that's really important. On that vein, right, so previously I have actually emailed you at least 2-3 times, and I've actually asked you the last time I phoned up. For those of us who, let's say, want to stay below the radar for whatever reason, and we want to help you fund your show, and we don't want to use bank accounts and all of that sort of stuff, maybe postal orders, all of that palaver, can you just put it out there on your Twitter account or wherever it is that you want to put it, or an address, a physical address, where people like myself can contribute without going through the regular forms of, you know, contribution. You know,
yeah, I understand. I understand that.
I've done it a few times. Now, I know, because you're a one-man band. Sorry, it took over you. You're a one-man band, so your time is limited. But I did email you a couple of times, and I figured, I know the way to get Richie's attention is to on the top line of the email, just to swear wildly, and maybe that'll catch his attention, and then he'll read the email.
You'd be surprised, Aid. You'd be surprised at how many times people swear at me in emails. So that wouldn't necessarily get my attention, but anyway, go ahead.
Right, so basically I've done that a couple of times, and it hasn't worked. I actually sent a letter to your, I think it's your business address, that was, I don't know exactly where I found it, for a reply. I haven't got anything back. I'm assuming that's because you're a one-man band.
It is, yeah. Between you and me, and while I am a lot of things,
yeah.
Not returning correspondence, to me, there's nothing more vulgar than that. If I get a letter from anybody, or if I get an email, I do respond. I do, Aid, because it's something was drilled into me when I started out in radio years ago. Listen, let me just say two things before you continue. First of all, it's not false modesty when guys like me say, look, stop mythologizing or eulogizing guys like me. People need to stop doing that. I present a platform, and I'm able to do that because of skills that were trained into me by some amazing men and women in Ireland many years ago. And that platform enables people to come on and say things that are important sometimes for us to hear. Sometimes they're not important, but that's all I am. I know, because we're all in a state of shock at what's happening in the world, we do like to come together, and I can understand why we do mythologise the presenters, but we shouldn't do that. I don't believe we should do that, and we should give no importance to the likes of guys like me whatsoever. That being said, it is important to help support that when people can. So when I say, and my friend Tez in Salford has been on to me about this, when I say that I will give an address out, I will do. Tez has offered to use his own business address. He's got his own business. Tez is a businessman. and he's got his own business and he's happy for me to use that. I'm very reticent to be putting my home address obviously in the public. I, even though people who don't like me very much did do that several months ago. But Ed, I give you my solemn promise, there will be an address for people who want to put £2 or £3 into an envelope and send it. That is a promise, and I'll get that done by next week. So let me ask you a question then.
Go on.
Listening to things like John from Wales earlier on saying they're microchipping the food bins, how does that make you feel? That surprising?
It doesn't surprise me at all. I'll be honest with you, just linking back to what you were talking about, mythologising, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your butt, Richie. You know, that's not...
Oh, no, I know you're not, Ed. I know. I didn't take it like that.
What I'm trying to say is this, right? And, you know, you sort of quip about you're a big, baldy gammon.
Which I am, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? And, you're not backwards and coming forwards and all the rest of it. Not all of us are like that, mate. Yeah? And sometimes... it's important for people who are of that disposition to stand up and call it a spade, because a lot of us are, you know, I haven't got kids, and I was thinking, you know, I sort of try and bounce this off people that I know, and I go, well, if you look at the world that it is, and it's, I'm not going to swear, because you do enough for us, I'm only joking.
So did the guest tonight, go on.
If you look at the world that it is a basket case in every single direction.
Yeah, it is.
And you start, the most important part of it is, now you've got, it's political season with all the elections. Now you know that none of these politicians are going to rock up and talk about the thing that's at the base of it, which is fractional reserve banking.
Yeah.
And usury. That's at the base of everything, because it is a religion. That's what it is, right? And it keeps us in check. And linked to that is obviously politicians, corporations, and the just inane nonsense of just of mindless consumerism. But it's a religion that's sold to us. Most people, they think that's the way life should be. Yeah, and so when... you've got somebody who's, you know, I know you don't say that you're brave and all that. I personally think there is a level of bravery about you because, like I say, you know, most people are scared. They don't want to put their head above the parapet because what happens to people like that? Well, you've talked about it before. Well, things like JFK happens to people.
Yeah.
Do you understand? And even the little people, the little people version of that. So when you're talking about the bins, it's another symptom of just the nonsense. I say keep things simple. Keep things simple. What do people want? They want their health. They want somewhere safe and clean to live. They want good food in their bellies. For their kids, they want love and they want a sense of direction for their kids. They want to be enlightened as opposed to educated strokes, propagandized. And they want to do the right thing. That's what people want to do.
Tell me this, Dave. Tell me this. Are you working at the moment?
I suppose I am. Yeah, I'm a full time carer. So yeah, I am.
Full time carer. Yeah. It just goes to what you were talking about. It is. It's. I don't have a fatalistic approach to it. I have a realistic approach to it. It is today. It's very easy for me today to say the things that I do say, because there's no going back for me, if you know what I mean. I know that. I would find it difficult to work in commercial media again, and these days I might find it difficult to work in academia again because of my opinions, but I'm okay with that. For a lot of people, it's a very, very nervous thing. It's a very nervous time for them when it comes to being on Facebook or Twitter with their pals, having a bit of a laugh and being a bit loose and saying what they think about things, because it can have absolutely terrible consequences for them. You know.
See, the thing is, I'm going to highlight something to you, Richie, okay? And again, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your backside here, right? But when we're born, right, we're born, obviously, in our birthday suit with a positive energy. That's it. That's what kids are. You understand? And then, obviously, we then, through whatever interaction in life, we are made positive and negative by what we sort of see and all the rest of it. Now, I've got, in that context, I grew up as a complete snowflake.
Did you?
Honestly, I'm being honest. I would take the deep, I would take offence at not everything, but you know, I was easy to sort of, it was easy to push my buttons and make me feel, oh, you know, I feel really hurt by that. That's what that person said. And then very after honest. Listening to people like yourself, again, because I hadn't experienced that. No, I had nobody in my life. I know it sounds crazy. I had nobody in my life to sort of say, oh, this is how it works. Where that, and the concept was introduced to me that, oh, remember that thing, sticks and stones may break my bones? Well, it's actually true. Words are powerful, but they are inanimate.
Yeah.
You know, that if you check yourself after somebody coats you off, you're not going to be covered in blood and cut.
Hey, I love this London slang, by the way. I love this stuff. When somebody coats you off, this is quality stuff, this. This
but
is
you,
great.
You know what I mean? And yeah. What I'm saying to you is, when I go, when you go back to the, I'm not trying to eulogize you, but you learn things where you learn them. And one thing that one of the many things that I've learned in relation especially listening to you, and it isn't just you, there's plenty of, you know, there's a guy in Bristol, the BSC, BCFN guy, Tony Goslin, and all of these people, David Icke, blah, 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 all of these people together. It's that concept that, you know what, you're not going to die. You're not going to be hurt by somebody saying something bad about you. You're actually going to learn something about you and that person. And life in general.
But you might be surprised to know that I was a bit like you at one time.
Really? You know what?
Going way back.
That makes me feel better.
No, it's the truth. There was a time when I was very self-righteous. It was during my radio days back in Ireland. Yeah. And I had the lefty outlook. The new left outlook. And I thought that I knew everything about, you know, I was kind of progressive. And I wouldn't listen to other people. So I had to kind of divest myself of that nonsense. So, no, I'd love to say, yeah, I was always one of these guys that engaged with people who disagreed with me. I'd be a liar, Ed, so I was very much like you.
Oh, well, that's great, you know, because that sort of reinforces what I was hoping was true, which I thought all know to be true. We learn from each other. We learn. Yeah. We're not born with the answers. We learn as we go along. And you learn. You obviously, back in the day, you were like, no, it's me, I'm right. And then you learn to go, well, hang on a minute, because you do that thing where you go, well, and this is a brilliant concept, you know, listen to people who you, metaphorically, violently disagree with. Do that. Because you're teaching yourself something there. And you know what? You might actually learn something. So anyway, going back to what I was saying, you know, you need to get this funding thing sorted out. Bless you.
I will do. Listen,
because I know you don't like you. I think you have a hard time accepting a compliment. But here's one for you, Richie. You do a great job. You do a great, and you do a valuable job, and you do a real job. A real job, mate, honestly. And I'm saying, if it's the funding, I don't think you'll ever use your passion for it, because I think the passion just flows out of you. If it's the funding thing, for God's sake, bless you, but I have asked you two or three times and I've sworn at you in an email just to get your attention. It doesn't work. I've sent letters to your business address. I think you've got a business address.
Well, I don't. This is the thing. A limited company was set up a few years ago and it's not being used. I operate as a sole trader.
Got you.
You see, so I swear, one of the things I will not do, I'll always fess up. If I am caught out, I'll fess up. No, I've not seen any such letter. Ed, I would have been onto you in a heartbeat if I did.
Listen, so basically, I'm not going to bother going to that business address. Nobody expects you to publish your home address. That would be plain daft, obviously. But if we can get, for all your listeners and all your supporters, just a postal address for those of us who just don't...
Right, it's done. It's done.
Right?
It's going
so
to be
that,
done.
That way we can,
and I was only talking about it with my friend Tess.
My postal order, right?
We're going back to the 70s with the postal orders. I love it.
Well, you know, it's still out there. But let me ask you this. If a postal order is sent to you, is that good in terms of money?
Yeah, well, of course,
I'm just checking.
No, absolutely. You're kidding me. Yeah, of course. They look
like
they're showing.
Like I say,
I'm going to take. I'm going to take some more because there's people desperately trying to get through there. Let me say something to you.
Last thing I'm going to say, Richard. Last thing I'm going to say. If you get to that stage where you're feeling dejected, or listen, you've got to look after you and the family and the blah blah. I understand that. Everyone understands that. But if it's a funding thing, let's just deal with that, because we need people like you out there. You and your ilk, because what you'll do, you'll influence other people to do what you're doing. That's the point, Richie. Yeah?
Listen, anyway. Mate, I'm not going to coach you off for saying that, by the way.
It's the truth. I reckon most of your listeners listening to it will go, yeah, it's absolutely true. Because most of them out there have got families and kids and all the rest of it. They cannot risk going, you know, the next politician that knocks at my door, I'm not going to be rude to them, but I'm going to say to them, there's two sorts of politician. One of them who's completely ignorant to what's going on around them. And number two, the other one is somebody who really knows what's going on around them. I don't know which one is more dangerous.
Neither do
but I. But they're both dangerous.
Hey, listen, if you get a visit from a politician, do let me know. Aidan, I'm going to move on and take some more before I get through, before I get to 7 o'clock. Brilliant call, Aidan. Thanks, mate, for that. And thanks for caring about the programme.
Publish the address, Richie.
I will do. I'll do it by next week. And if I don't, you can come back on the programme and have a go at me.
Take care, my brother, from another mother. I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Aid. God bless, mate. Bye. Bye for now. Lovely. Aid from Watford there. I love the lingo. Coach you off. I love it. I said I'd give Faisal a shout. And I said I'd do that because we've had a few phone-ins and Faisal has not been on. I do try and get... we've had a lot of new callers tonight, obviously, which has been brilliant. I know Dean was on last year. So we'll give Faisal a shout and get Faisal on for a few minutes. It's coming up for, I don't know, 20 minutes to the top of the hour. I wasn't patronising Aid. I did have a chat with Tez about this. Tez said to me, you can use my business address if you want, Richie. And I said, all right, we'll do that then. It's not you. I'm not trying to hide from my audience. You know that. It's that there are people who don't like me very much. Again, I'm not really that important, but there are people who don't like me. For some of the things that I say and for some of the guests I've had on, and they would gleefully damage my property. You know, there are people under investigation at the moment for threatening me and threatening my family. Now, they'll never do it again, these people. But these are things you have to consider when you do kind of step away from the herd, you see. Anyway, I'm not worried, and neither should you be, but this is why, you know, the whole kind of secrecy thing. Right, Faisal!
Hello.
How are you, pal? You well? Good to chat with you. I said you must think he's not going to give me a shout, but I am. Of course I'm going to give you a shout. It's good to have
you. Doing fine. Thanks for giving me a shout.
Not at all, pal. What did you make of John in Wales and the wheelie bin? Well, not wheelie bins. I keep saying wheelie bins. The little food bin which we all have, microchipped. Mother of God. What do you think?
Yeah, over here we do have, because it's flats, we do have a sort of a red wheelie bin, a small one.
You're in Switzerland, remind me. I think you were in Switzerland.
No, I'm Germany. I'm in London at the moment, just a bit northwest of Wembley.
Ah, yeah, because I know you travel around Europe. Yeah. So, well, we're all going to be looking, right? I'm going to be looking at this green thing that I've got to see if it's microchipped.
Well, I kind of wonder how this microchip is supposed to work. I mean, food goes in the bin. What does the microchip actually do?
Good point. It can't just be a microchip, because a microchip in and of itself doesn't do anything. It's got to be able to connect or be read by something. Right?
And also it has to be able to detect what's going into it.
Yeah, how does it do that?
Like, it does seem... Yeah, I have to look into it more, because I cannot figure out how having a microchip in a bin is actually going to do anything.
And we can both clarify, because we've been tweeting the news stories. John is telling the truth. It is real. And it is happening in North Wales.
I've seen the stories, but I've looked for details, but I cannot figure out how this thing's actually supposed to work.
We're not surprised, though, are we? We're not surprised, are we, that they might try and put devices...
Oh, no, that they do something like that. Of course not. It's just, again, I'm wondering whether, in fact, it isn't them saying that, oh, be careful of your food waste because we're after you, when actually they can't do a thing with it, which is very similar to the facial recognition stuff, which of course alarmed a lot of people, and then you kind of got a few stories saying, well, actually it's very inaccurate and it makes a lot of mistakes, and at the end of the day might not really work at all. And you know, when something only partially works, depending on what it is, it actually means that doesn't work at all if it only partially works.
I was horrified when that gentleman, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he was in London, when he passed one of the vans and he put his hands over his face and he was arrested for it. Do you remember that?
What they actually do with it, that's bad already. The fact that you can't actually walk past one of these things without hiding your face, which, I mean, is a right.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, Faisal. I'm trying to think on my feet. Did the guy get fined in court? I think he did. I think he was basically found to be in the wrong. As you said, you are not allowed to walk past one of these things and hide your face.
Yeah, it'd be worth doing a follow-up on that, because it is interesting what actually happens, because it's one thing them trying to do it, but then it's another thing them actually getting a result.
Well, we've just had a tweet from Paul Barton. I think Paul is smart. Wait for this. I don't use the term smart offensively, Paul, by the way. Paul says, microchips in bins. I'll start putting my rubbish in the tip or using public bins. Now, this is interesting. Because, again, our listeners overseas won't know. Every local authority has at least one, what we call tip, but we should call dump. And if you've got a council tax bill, you can go around as often as you want and use the public facility. So when we moved into this place, we obviously had a lot of waste that was overflowing the bins, but I was able to put it in the back of the car and drive it to the tip or the dump. Wouldn't it just be the thing that one of the payoffs is that they keep more money because they don't have to collect so many bloody bins? Because to avoid this, we start going to the tip with our stuff. I just wonder, maybe I'm talking through my backside.
It could be it could just be to see how people react.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I would just carry on as normal and look into it and see if there's actually more information on it. Because I still can't see how an actual microchip is supposed to actually do anything. Do they have a camera to see what's going into the bin? Do they have sensors that somehow analyze what's going into the bin? I really don't see how that's supposed to work.
You raise a very good point, and it's one that I could have brought up with John. You know, what are they doing? I mean, it's bad enough they're putting a microchip there, but you're right to make the point that a microchip in and of itself on its own doesn't do very much. So there must be more to this. They're not just going around and sticking these things on bins. Again, let's make the point, if you think this is happening in your area, do not go at it. Same way that if you think people are putting stuff on your lampposts and you're not happy. Look, I know I've preached civil disobedience in the past, and I'm not being a hypocrite here. There are severe penalties. Councils are bastards. You know, be careful. Don't go vandalising stuff. You know, you might not think you're vandalising it, but they'll come after you, won't they, Faisal? They will.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if it's out on the street, you know, and the hooligans wandering about and doing stuff, I mean, what can you do?
You can't do very much. Hey, listen, I will take another call in a couple of minutes. Before I do, though, was there something else you wanted to bring up?
There was something I've been wanting to put out for a while. I've sort of tweeted it out. I think I've done comments on YouTube, but of course these things get kettled and censored and so on. It's about Linux. I know you're not much of a fan of Linux, and I kind of understand why, because the Linux community online is a very strange thing. And
what is it, by the way? Because I mean, it's not that I don't like it. I'm an ignoramus there, Faisal. This is obviously an operating system, is it?
It's basically an alternative operating system that came out theoretically about 20 years ago, but around about 10, maybe 15 years ago, it became kind of usable as an alternative to Windows, which of course I was very interested in, looked into it about 12, 11 years ago, and in the end kind of gave up on it, because just about everything I could do on Linux I could actually do on Windows when Windows XP was around, and so it became kind of unnecessary.
And it became unnecessary.
So I had a gap. I've looked into it again now because, of course, the whole Windows 10 thing, it's much worse, and they're about to end support for Windows 7, which a lot of people don't know what that means, but it doesn't mean much. You can still use Windows 7, of course, but certain things won't work.
You're doing a very good job of explaining this. Because some of us, we buy a computer or a laptop every 3 or 4 years because they break down. They're designed with this, there's a lovely sophisticated name for it. It's almost like a Terminator chip. Eventually they break down. And so you'll go from one period to another. You'll buy a computer, Windows 7. Then you'll go and buy a computer a few years later. It'll be Windows 9. Now we're on Windows 10. And they decommission the previous versions of Windows, and you're stuck with the new one. And you believe, don't you, that Windows 10, this is surveillance on steroids, isn't it?
Well, Windows 10... I think all of them have been surveillance. I was always suspicious of Windows XP anyway, but Windows 10 isn't just surveillance. It's surveillance using up the resources of your computer to a fantastic degree.
Yeah, making it slow.
And also just taking the whole update system out of control. I was listening to Outer Light, Esoteric Ed, a few weeks ago, and he just switched to Linux because he was in the middle of editing a video and Windows 10 just decided to update. And so there was a big gap in his video. He decided not to fix it, but just to leave it there. And during that gap to explain what happened and to say, that's it, he's finished with Windows 10. He's moving on to Linux now.
We've had a tweet on it. Chris tweets, I use Linux and it's good. Windows 10 was just a pain, all ads, etc. That's the surveillance aspect with Windows 10. I believe Windows 10 has made it easy for Google to pick up that me and you might want to buy a pair of Hunter wellies because the weather's getting bad. And then we get bombarded with ads everywhere we go. So you go on to BBC or you go on to the Daily Mail to read a sports story, don't you, Faisal? Next thing you get an ad for Hunter's wellies. And Windows has got something to do with that, no?
Well, that's actually Google, I think, more.
But, no, it is, I mean, Google, right? But doesn't Windows make it easy?
Windows part of it.
Yeah, of course it is. Hey, listen, Mr. Sin says the phrase we're looking for is planned obsolescence. Jean Ann said the same thing. Do you believe that? Planned obsolescence or gadgets, particularly your laptops, designed to start behaving and working really badly and poorly after 2 or 3 years. I can see it with a Dell laptop I've got here in front of me. It's gone to pot now, Faisal. It cost a lot of money 3 years ago. It's useless now.
Oh yeah, they do, and this is the only way around it is to use Linux for some stuff. I mean, definitely for going online.
How would you get Linux then? Would you download it then?
Right, well, basically it's kind of got easier in a way. Before you had to download it, burn it onto a CD, and then boot up the CD, and quite often you had to change a setting in the BIOS of your computer first, so it would boot up from CD. And the whole CD burning issue could be problematic. Linux was very eccentric whether it would work or not. Like, you could do it and then it just wouldn't boot up, and the forums don't really go into that, and I have my own list of which Linuxes actually boot up and which ones just plain don't.
Hayden Hewitt would love speaking to you because this is his bag. Do you know, when we started this radio show years ago, one of the things that David said to me was, in a few years, Richie, he said, you'll be able to put on programs like this, like a guy like you explaining tech issues in context with the awakening. Just little things like that. It's brilliant and it's important. And people want to know, where can I go to chat and it's safer? Where can I go with less surveillance? But you know the problem, of course, Faisal, you know the answer. If I start doing that now, Ofcom will tell me, you are a radio station, you must have a license, so I can't do that now.
It's very difficult. To be honest, I think that the reason also I found this show is because your show is the one that does the most in that direction in terms of interactivity, actually getting stuff out there, and real people being able to get on the show.
Yeah, that's right. And wouldn't it have been lovely if it wasn't for Ofcom that we could have done that? That we could have put together a schedule. Thanks for saying that, by the way. We could have put a schedule together and we could have had people like yourself explaining to people in a way they can understand it, navigating the internet and using software and stuff like that. It was always my dream. And when YouTube, before YouTube started the demonetization, we were starting to see real money starting to come in to our YouTube channel. And we projected that in a year or two's time, we would have started to bring in serious money. And we were going to spend, Simon and myself were going to spend money putting together a real station to get all these programs. But then Ofcom would say, no, you've got to have a license. And of course, we can't bloody well have that, mate. That's really interesting, that, Faisal. You know, I'm not patronising you. That is really interesting to me, that.
Just a couple of things I want to add. From having played around with Linux lately, is one thing I found out, which they won't tell you, is that if you've got an Android system, like usually they say you can try out Linux. Nowadays you can do it on a USB. It's easier than it used to be. But you can try out a live Linux basically, and it won't mess up anything on your computer. It's not on your hard drive or anything. It won't affect your Windows, which is true. However, if you're running an Android system usually on that computer and you want to try out a Linux, like it's a tablet or something like that, then Linux will sometimes kill the Android. The Android won't boot up after that. So that's a warning out there. It's fine with Windows if you've got an old Windows computer or something where you just want to try out Linux. You don't want to wipe out the Windows, then that's absolutely fine. You can try out a Linux without worrying. If it's got Android on it, beware. You can't really do that with an Android system unless you know how to reinstall the Android. If you can do that, that's fine. But if you're not too techy and you want to keep your Android, don't let Linux anywhere near it.
Mate, thanks for your contributions to the programme, Faisal. I really appreciate them, mate.
Cheers.
No, it's always good to have you on, mate.
Great thanks. To be given the opportunity.
Thanks. Anytime, mate. We'll do more of these phone-ins anyway as we go along. There's no doubt about that.
That's really good. You're doing more regular ones now. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, and we get to hear stories like, obviously, John's. And, of course, a couple of weeks back, we heard about what's going on in Oldham from a caller, and I'm looking into that as we speak.
Oh, yeah, I love the poetry, by the way, from Dean.
Wasn't that absolutely outstanding by Dean, wasn't it? And it made me think of Lemon Sissé and the Hardy's Well poem, which somebody, was it you? One of the other listeners has tweeted a picture to it.
Yeah,
it was you. Mate, have a brilliant weekend, Faisal, and thanks for the heads
you
up,
too,
Linux. Cheers, mate, and bye for now. That was Faisal, who's in London at the moment. Linux, these are important things, you see. These are things I know nothing about, techie things. Faisal, it's his business. He knows what he's talking about. Natalie Stacey, who I met at Hayden's free speech and Graham's free speech event in Manchester. Meat Space, of course, it was called. Natalie would be very au fait with this stuff, but I am really ignorant. When things go wrong here, Paul the boy Ripley, gets a call from me, from Fab Radio, and out he comes. There were one or two callers trying to get in there. Accept my most sincere apologies. When we do another one of these really soon, do let me know and I'll get you on first. In fact, I'll just make a note of the numbers and I'll look out for you and I'll get you on first. That's how we do it there. That's about it then for Thursday's programme and for the week. It's flown by this week. We've had some special people on the programme this week. I want to give a big shout out again to Fionnuala Moss and her personal story, but her overview of what's happening to people with learning disabilities and autism in this country. That was bombshell stuff, and it's all true. Thanks for Dean Smith, who runs a care home in Sheffield, for coming on and endorsing what Fionnuala is saying and talking about his own story there. And it was Dean who read that remarkable poem about climate change and Greta Thunberg. And I mean remarkable. Honest to God. When I get the transcript of it, I'll put it on Facebook and I'll try and figure out a way to get it on the website. Because at the moment, Hayden is doing things to the Richie Allen Show website. We're going to upgrade it a bit. And at the moment, I'm finding it difficult to put articles on there. Again, it's because of my own idiocy. I'm not very technically minded. I'm not very good at things like that. So there you go. And wasn't it lovely to hear from Michael Rivero, who's made the big move from Hawaii, where he spent, well, several decades, the beautiful Hawaii, and he's moved back to the mainland with his wife Claire, and he's getting himself set up again. The What Really Happened radio show is a must listen if you haven't heard it before. Thanks to Michael for coming back on again. I love Michael Rivero. He's been a great pal to me since I first began making programmes like this. Thanks to John in Wales. Brilliant, John. Thanks to Aid for the kind things that he said to Faisal as well. I hope it didn't leave anybody out. And I will get that PO. It won't be a PO box. It'll be Tez's business. Tez is happy to do it. I'm happy to do it. And if you do, if you are very reluctant to use the banks, if you're reluctant to use PayPal, and I totally understand why, believe you me, I totally get it. We'll get a setup where you can send an envelope. All right. I'm going out with some Elton John. I know, the screaming queen, the diva that is Elton. I like Elton. I like his music. This is Daniel closing out Thursday's Richie Allen Show. Join me on Sunday morning for Sunday View. I will be appearing with Maria Heller on Maria's programme tomorrow, but it won't be live, it'll be recorded. You'll be able to catch up with it when Maria posts it, when she puts it out there. That's Maria, MERIA.net, Maria.net. Lovely lady, of course, you know all about Maria. So I'll be doing an interview with Maria tomorrow. She wants to get the UK news from me. That's all it is. And I give her the UK news. There you are. You look after yourselves and one another. Mind yourselves. See you on Sunday at 11 o'clock with the newspapers. Until then, bye for me. See you soon. Bye.